When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
High in the air toward deep left field. No doubt about this one. Over the picnic area. It's gone. The sixth home run of the year for David Wright.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Your lipstick is calling up by the angel. I know exactly what goes on.
You love playing these whiny 90 vocalists. I love it. Or early 2000s.
I know exactly what goes on.
I get a kick out of it. The Blink 182, the Sum 41. What band is this?
I don't even know the name of the band. It's Q without the E.
Oh, yeah. This is Taking Back Sunday. My head. I remember this song, yeah. But the very much the whiny.
Oh, wait. Hello there. Where are you? And I'm so sorry.
All right, 304. McMonagle here with you on The Fan. 888-808-1019. Let's finish up on some of the baseball calls. I'm going to get to the Yankees, but I got to get to the Giants. So we'll get to the Giants this hour and the Hard Knocks show and some of the things we've learned. Who looked good, who looked bad. What they had to say about Saquon Barkley. But most important, because the position is the future. What can we glean about their thought process on Daniel Jones? And you know what? It's exactly as I expected. 888-808-1019, but let's get to these Met and Yankee calls here for a little bit. Mark in Newark. What's up, Mark?
Hey, what's going on, Mac?
What's up, buddy?
Hey, so I'm sitting here at this time in the morning as usual listening. And I'm getting my charges off of the show. And it's a good show.
Thank you.
As much as the back and forth, it makes me laugh. I love it. I usually chop it up with P. Hoff and Al Cintron. And both of us, me and Al, we were losing our minds about how come we didn't get J.D. Martinez to DH. Well, that happened. And Hoff and I, we were ecstatic about getting Lindor to play start off lead off.
Yeah.
And that happened.
Yeah.
And now you just mentioned the word glean, Mac. Well, I'm gleaning over having, you probably seen my text.
you want to trade for Springer?
I'm gleaning over having George Springer in six, anywhere from five down for the young guys. And for his power, I mean, him in the middle of our lineup, too. Forget about it. I don't care if we don't get one other player, Mac.
Yeah,
like I said, Marte, Beatty, them cats, they can go. Bye. Get me Springer on this team, and our offense is scary.
Okay, here, let me just tell you something right now. One, your trade proposal, Marte, McNeil, Beatty. I don't know why they'd want Marte or McNeil, and I don't know why.
Well, the last part of it,
and I don't and I don't know why you'd want George Springer, to be totally honest with you.
Ooh, are you kidding me?
A lot of times
I hear people say, "Oh well, this guy like Sal was crying over Yamamoto, and everybody's been whispering Soto and all that. Springer is a proven baller, and now add him with what we have around him. Forget about it. It ain't all about Singer, as you said all night. This team is mashing. Put Springer in there between six and the bottom, and
Springer,
tell me that doesn't make us more mashers.
Springer has been hot for, I guess, a week. He got hot with the Yankees. He's continued it a little bit. He's been hot for a week. He's hitting .214. With an on-base, he's with an on-base percentage of .300, and an OPS of 641.
It's where he is. It's where he is, and who he's surrounded with. You even had our team buried.
I did
at the beginning, but you were talking about individual performances, and what I'm countering with is that the way that this team is constructed right now, the pitcher's not getting a breath. And if you add a Springer between the five hole in the bottom, along with Vientos, along with Alvarez, along with that whole, our bottom half is just as powerful as our top half.
No, I completely disagree with you. I don't want anything to do with
it. Well, that's cool if you disagree,
Springer's 34. Springer's 34 years old, hitting 210.
Yeah, what
do you think
JD
you're getting?
Martinez 34?
Yeah, and JD Martinez is killing it. And it's still been hitting well all year. Springer hasn't been. Springer
is arguably. I want him on the Mets.
Okay,
I don't care about the Yankees. I want him on the Mets.
This has nothing to do with the Yankees.
I want him Springer's, on. All you ever talk about is the Yankees. That's why I keep texting
I just
opened
the last two shows. I've talked more than you see. This is what I'm talking about. Shut up. Shut up and stop with your relentless tweets. Stop it now. That's all I talk about is Yankees. I literally have done nothing but talk Mets all week. I opened the show today with the Mets. When the Mets are dead and buried and no one cares about them, I did most of the Yankees. Now the Mets kind of are the story and how well they're playing, and them at the trade deadline is far more interesting than the Yankees at the trade deadline, because I know what the Yankees are going to try and do. We all know. They're going to try and add. There seems to be some sort of intrigue in what the Mets are going to do. The Mets are a far more interesting team over the last week and a half, and I've talked more Mets than Yankees. So everybody shut up. All you crybabies out there, you Met fan crybabies, because I'm a Yankee fan. I've talked tons of Mets. And I don't care. I just says George Springer has nothing to do with Yankees Mets. George Springer is not good anymore. Up until the Yankee series, where I'll admit he got hot and killed the Yankees for a couple days, he was arguably one of the worst, if not the worst, everyday player in Major League Baseball. He's hitting .214. His on-base percentage is .300. He's got a .641 OPS. What do you think you're getting in Springer? Is there a chance he gets hot the rest of the season? I suppose at 34, I doubt it, but I suppose there's a chance. But you want to trade Marte? You want to trade Beatty? You want to trade Beatty, who's killing it in AAA, who, yes, has failed at the major league level for the Mets a little bit, but was still a top third base prospect in all of baseball? You want to trade him for an aging George Springer? You could do better than that. If I'm trading Beatty, I'm trading for pitching and bullpen, which is what I need right now. The lineup's been pretty damn good. And if I'm going to trade for someone, I'm not going to trade for the likes of the lowly George Springer. This isn't 5 years ago. He's been awful this year. And if you want to trade for George Springer and give some low-level prospect for George Springer, some nothing, no-nothing prospect, that's what George Springer is going to require, and you want to take some shot because you believe you can get the best out of him in the second half, I'm open to it, but the idea, you got to trade Beatty for George Springer, and you bring him here, and the middle of the lineup is just dynamic. Please keep up with your tweets that insult my baseball knowledge. DJ in Spring Valley, how are you, DJ? DJ. Hello?
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 Hey.
DJ?
Yeah.
Hello?
Hello?
Hi, DJ, you there?
Yeah.
Oh, hello?
Yeah.
Is that you?
Yep.
DJ?
Yeah.
Okay, what's up, man?
First of all, I got to agree with you that you're Mets Yankees. Want the Mets to do good, make it to the World Series, and ultimately lose to the Yankees.
That
in the World
sounds
Series,
perfect.
Yankees fan.
Sounds perfect. Perfect, perfect, perfect. Another Subway Series. This time, let's go 7.
Yeah. But, and I also agree with you, the Mets got to keep.
Yeah, absolutely they got to keep. Then the question is, where do they add? They got to add at the bullpen. I mean, I think the question of selling for me is dead and buried. I can't imagine anybody still would think that's what you should do. It's absolutely it doesn't make any sense to me. So now the question is bullpen. I wouldn't look to add a bat necessarily, because I don't want to trade away I don't want to trade a ton away, because I understand what they're trying to do here, and I'm certainly not going to touch the top-level prospects, so I'm looking for, you know, some bullpen help. Maybe, but that's pretty much it. I'm looking for some bullpen help just to secure that bullpen. I'm not saying trade away Acuna and everybody for a middle of the lineup bat to really make this offense just absolutely crazy, or go out and figure out a way to get an excellent starting pitcher here and bring and, you know, trade Jet Williams or anything like that. But I would
you have to look to improve the
bullpen.
Offseason.
Yeah, agreed.
That's for the Mets to work on in the offseason to try to get more high level players. I think right now they need to add more of a bullpen.
No doubt.
That's their problem.
No doubt. I agree, DJ. Thank you for the call. I felt like you were almost with me that entire call. You were just like right there. Where we were kind of having a conversation and we kind of weren't. Peter in Manhattan, what's up, Pete?
How you doing, Chris?
How are you?
Yeah, and Springer just—he was saying 190 for the Yankees series. I mean, who would want Springer? I mean, it's amazing.
No, I mean, I know he's. Yeah. I wouldn't listen. If you wanted, if they cut him and you want to pick him up for the league minimum and give him a chance because you think, hey, he's a proven winner in the postseason. All right, I'm not opposed to that, but I'm not certainly making a trade for him, including Beatty, and then saying, woohoo, my offense is killer now. That's crazy.
Yeah, Chris, you know what I'm calling about? I mean, the Yankees starters, like Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde, the first 60 games, they were record territory. You know, they didn't allow two runs in the first five.
They had the longest stretch in Major League Baseball history of an entire rotation not getting at least through four innings.
Exactly.
And now they can't pitch.
They didn't allow two runs.
Yeah.
Now they're ERA, I think, the last 17 innings. 17 games is like over 7.
Correct.
So the question I have for you, Chris, is how do you assess the starting pitching? I mean, is it good? Is it bad? Is it okay? Do we have time to evaluate? And what changes do you make in the future? Do you cut the rotation from 5 to 4? I mean, do you look for a pitcher in the trade market? I mean, what's your evaluation and what do you do going forward? Chris, so that's my question. I hope you're doing well and your family's well.
Oh, that's very kind,
Chris,
Peter.
And we'll speak soon.
All right, you too. I hope everyone in your world is well as well. I hate when I say well as well. I wrote that in an email once, and I felt like as soon as I sent it, I said, hope you're doing well as well. It sounds terrible. But my evaluation of the Yankees starting pitching is they weren't quite as good as they were when they were the best staff in the American League and arguably right there with Philadelphia as the best staff in Major League Baseball. And I don't think they're this bad where they have an ERA over 7 over the last couple rounds through. I think they're somewhere in the middle. And as far as I think, you know, I think they're going to turn around. I don't think even Rodon, who I'm disappointed in, and I clearly no longer, he might pitch well enough the rest of the way. And I expect him to turn around. I do, because I do believe in his stuff. I do. And I don't think he's so bad that as long as he's healthy, he'll get back to being a serviceable pitcher. Now, he was pitching to an under 3 ERA. I don't know if he can get back to that necessarily. I don't know. But I expect him to be better than just getting killed every start. So, I mean, I think he'll figure it out. But unfortunately for him, he might even pitch his way into making the Yankees feel a little bit better about him in a big start, a postseason start. But I'm at the point where I would have to see that be successful before I would ever trust it. I no longer trust him in a playoff start, a big-time start down the stretch where they would need the game to get into the playoffs or need the game to win the division. I would not trust him at all in that kind of spot. Unfortunately, that's what he's shown me. And until he proves me otherwise, that's how I'm going to feel about him. Luis Gil, I think he's a young kid figuring things out as of right now. Could the fatigue be an issue? Sure. Location, like people say, listen, over the course of a game, people say it's not necessarily the velocity that takes a hit, it's the location. But I don't think there's any major reason to think he's hit a wall just yet. But maybe he has. We'll find out. I still like Stroman. I still think Nestor's a gamer. And they have the best pitcher in baseball in Cole, who I still believe will be that eventually. Could they look to add starting pitching? Absolutely, I suppose. I think bullpen is a little bit more of the need. But again, you've got Clark Schmidt coming back, who is very good this year. Certainly not a great top of the rotation pitcher that is lights out, but he was having a very, very good year. So he's coming back, and I'm looking for impact players, right? This is what I've said from the beginning. I want impact players. So because the nature of the beast that is this new trade deadline since the added wild card and everybody and their mother looking for bullpen help, Is there a chance that the most dynamic player they could get is a rotation piece? And if that's the case, then I expect Brian Cashman to read that and then get the starting pitcher and possibly move guys like Nestor Cortez to the bullpen, move guys like Clark Schmidt to the bullpen, and then obviously move guys like Luis Gil to the bullpen. But I'm out there looking for a bat at the corner infield position, and then I'm looking for at least one arm, maybe two in the relievers. But I need them to be impact players. And I'd be willing to look at a starting rotation piece. But again, I don't think they need just another arm to get them through. I'm looking for an impact player. But we'll see where the chips fall and where they, because you know Cashman, he's going to add, but he's also not going to make terrible deals. And if he ends up getting to a point where he feels like all the relief situations feel like terrible deals, then he'll pivot elsewhere and try and bolster. He might, you know, get three bats and say, screw it, I got nothing in the pitching that made sense to me. I'm just going to see if we can really help our offense and make it through what we have. Like, he's going to add. We got this guy coming back. We got that guy coming back. We got Efros. We got this one. Maybe we can get through. I'm not making a terrible trade. I was able to get infield and outfield help depth-wise hitting, and that's where I went. Like, we don't know what Cashman's going to do. He's not going to make bad deals, but he's going to do something. Or I shouldn't say that, because he's made terrible deals. He won't make, make sure we know all the Cashman haters and the guys who get on me, I shouldn't have said that, because he's made terrible deals. Of course he has. He's not going to make what he deems bad deals. Billy and Merrick, what's up, Billy?
Hey, Chris, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm good. I just want to touch on that crazy Springer call.
Yes.
I don't know why we would want a 210 batter who strikes out a bunch joining the team. I think if the Mets want to make a trade and bundle those three guys, you would want to go after a Luis Roberts or a Brent Rooker from the A's from the A's or the White Sox, who are looking to get rid of these guys and get, you know, MLB ready players. That's who I would be aiming for.
Rather than a 34-year-old player who's at the tail end of his career, having the worst year of his career, hitting 200, and it was 190 a week ago. He's gotten hot over the last couple of days. 100% agree. I don't know if he strikes out a ton. I'm looking at right now he's got 56 strikeouts, which, I mean, projects to 100 for the course of the year, but that's league average. So he's not a big strike. Unfortunately, that's become league average in baseball. So he's not a big strikeout guy necessarily, but he's just done nothing this year. And it certainly wouldn't be someone I'm looking to target.
Yeah. And I just feel like, you know, those two teams are going to be selling off people. The Marlins is going to be selling off people. Could grab an arm from one of them also if needed.
Yeah,
but I mean, I would be looking to plug players from.
Yeah, listen, I completely agree. There are bats. I'm not focused on bats. Like, they have the best offense in baseball. I mean, sure, could you always, if something falls in on your lap and you feel like, hey, we couldn't. Same thing with Brian Cashman. If the Mets and David Stearns feels like he couldn't make a deal that made sense for them, and the relief pitching market got out of whack because so many teams are looking for it, and it just felt like, I'm not giving up my top prospects, and that's what it's going to take. And then they transition to bolstering the offense and going out and getting a legitimate right fielder or getting another second baseman, where you figure Iglesias isn't going to hit 400 all year and McNeil's a bum, so you might want to get another infielder. You know, if that's the move, fine, but I'm looking for pitching. So to even target, you know, Rooker or anybody else, I don't think it's necessary. I'm looking at pitching right now. Howard in Forest Hills, what's up, Howard?
Yeah, hi, Chris. Here's a coincidence. I get my New York magazine yesterday, mm-hmm. and they have an article about an ointment that gets rid of itching from mosquito bites. Okay?
All right.
I can
use it. It's slowed down a little bit. I haven't noticed as many mosquito bites as I did like two, three weeks ago, but it's been the start of the year in particular was just brutal for me.
Okay, so let me give you the name. It said you could get it online.
Oh, please.
It's MOPIKO, okay? And it says it stops the itching right away, and it smells like mint gum, okay?
Okay.
So it's worth trying. And
thank you, Howard.
And so it's one of those things that's worth keeping in the house for the future, you know?
Sure.
No. Just in case, you know?
I appreciate that, Howard. Thank you for looking out for me. And the next time you talk to my mother, tell her to stop bothering you. Because you're trying to be my mom there. I appreciate it. That's something my mother would say. You've been complaining about mosquito bites. I saw this thing on the TV. Maury in Belmore. Maury, tonight is your night, bro.
Tonight is your night. It could be the morning. I don't even know what time it is.
Well, I'm on in the morning, technically.
I don't even know. I know. But listen, all I can say is, do you smell something? There's something wrong with the Yankees. I don't know what it is. Offense, pitching, I don't know. Something's wrong, Chris, and I don't like it.
They're losing.
Dude, that's right. That is the problem.
I mean, I don't know if you've noticed, but yes, that's the problem. They're losing.
Just continue to not score as many runs as expected. Something's wrong. I don't know what it is. I'm not giving up, but I just think that we need to make some changes. Not enough youth in the lineup. I don't know what the problem is. I just can't seem to put my...
Well, I mean, listen, the problem is right now, for me, the main problem is the starting pitching. And I would give you more time. You know, I love you, but your line was terrible this morning. To me, the starting pitching is the main problem. And then you get to the offense second. It's probably, as much as we all clamor and scream about the lineup, and it certainly is an issue. I mean, it's definitely starting pitching. It's definitely the underbelly of the bullpen. And it's definitely then the offense, which right now is struggling. So let me get to it again. Because watching this offense, first of all, again, it's a major problem. There are two major problems with the offense. Yes, catcher is a problem right now. I get that. And many people are upset with Wells not starting and Trevino playing. Trevino's been better offensively this year than Wells. Maybe not in the last week and a half. But if you look at their numbers, Trevino had a 700 OPS. All right, Trevino's hit some home runs. Trevino has been better offensively than Wells. We might not like it. We might not think that that's the case in the moment, which maybe it's not. But he's proven over the course of this year to be a better hitter than Wells. So I don't know why we get so upset when Wells doesn't start. It's not like Wells has been killing it. But I understand. And then certainly I think it was the sixth inning, there's an opportunity to pitch. Because I also think they want to pitch. They want to have Luis Gil out there with the veteran catcher. Like, I think that was part of the reason. Everyone thinks it's not just the batting. It's they want Luis Gil to have a veteran catcher to help him get through the game. But there was a point I think it was the sixth inning with a runner on, and Luis Gil's already out of the game, and it's a right-handed relief pitcher. You could have pinch hit Wells. Boone has not done that this year. And especially, and I talked about this too, now that Ben Rice is here, you have a third catcher on the roster. The fear of losing that second catcher to injury and not having a catcher is now limited because you have a third catcher. God forbid you pinch hit Wells for Trevino and Wells, you know, takes one off the finger or whatever the case may be and needs to leave the game. You have Ben Rice there. So I don't know why he's not pinch hitting for him. He should have. And he hasn't shown that really all year. He's trusted his guys. And then but the ninth he did, but it felt late. He could have done it in the sixth. But the main problem is not these other guys. You know, Grisham, he's actually gotten hot. He's cooled off a little bit, I guess, the last couple games, but he's been pretty good when he gets everyday playing time. He's not a great bench player because he's used to playing more than he's played with the New York Yankees. So, yeah, that's a problem. The very end of the lineup's a problem. But the problem right now is Anthony Volpe and Verdugo, without question. Gleyber Torres has come around a little bit. I know he had a bad at-bat in the ninth or the eighth, whichever inning it was, where he had the count 3-0 and or 2-0 and whatever, and ended up striking out, swinging at a ball in the dirt. Terrible at bat. Had a terrible at bat. But he got a base hit the other way and drove in runs. Like, he's now got 7 hits in the last 4 games. That's pretty good to me. He's kind of turned it around a little bit. I feel okay about Gleyber at the moment. The problem, without question, is Anthony Volpe and Verdugo. And two things need to happen. I'm at the point where it needs to happen now. Volpe is no longer the leadoff hitter, and Verdugo can't hit cleanup. It's just, it needs to change. The offense is struggling enough. They're struggling to win games. You have to do something. And I told you before, Volpe at the bottom of the order does more for me than he does at the top. I felt that for a while. I just didn't have a better option as the leadoff hitter. But it's getting to the point, if you look at Anthony Volpe, his OPS now is under 700. At the beginning of the year, it looked like he was going to have this monster season, this second year of really emerging as a great player. And everybody, he was like the toast of the town. MLB Network was doing features on the difference in his swing. He's hitting the ball the other way. He's really found himself. He's going to be a star in this league. And he had, then he had the 20-game hitting streak. He's fallen off a cliff. And his he's hitting 240 or 250, and his OPS is under 700. And he's not taking walks, and his power is completely gone. This is a guy who hit 20 home runs last year, even in a down year, or, you know, it was his first year, so it's hard to call it a down year. But in a year where he didn't do the things we wanted him to do, he didn't get on base, he didn't hit singles, he didn't put the ball in play, he struck out too much. A lot of those things he's done better at, while still now struggling for the last 3 weeks and hurting his numbers. But he did show some power last year and hit 20 home runs. He's giving you no power, and he's not drawing any walks. So for me, I'm at the point where I didn't want to shuffle him. And when he first moved to the top of the order, I said, okay, but you can't move him. That's what I fear. But now it's getting to the point where he's struggling enough where I think, without question, moving forward, and I said this yesterday, I think I said it last week, I need Juan Soto at the top of the order. Right now, even when he's struggling, he gets on base, he walks. I need Juan Soto at the top. I need Aaron Judge hitting third. And then I need Ben Rice as my cleanup hitter. That's what needs to happen. Ben Rice right now is without question the guy giving them the best at-bats. By continually watching this team play, Ben Rice has given them the best at-bats. He looks, to me, like a hitter. He's been, I don't know how long it's going to last. They might make a trade at the deadline and minimize Ben Rice's role. I'm even open to that, as much as I like what I've seen from Ben Rice. But right now, he is the clear-cut next guy in line. I need him as the protection for, as crazy as that sounds, a young kid who's had a handful of at-bats in AAA needs to be my protection. Him and Glaber can be the two cleanup hitters, 4-5, whatever, right now. Against right-handed pitching Glaber, against left-handed pitching Glaber, right-handed pitcher Rice. Like, that's what I would do at the cleanup spot, and I would open up that two spot for a guy I'm trying to get hot. I'll tell you right now, tomorrow, my lineup would be Soto, Verdugo, Judge, Ben Rice. Then I would have Glaber Torres. That's what I would do. And I'm also at the point now, something has happened the last two games, yesterday specifically, that I'm at the point where I'm really probably not going to play DJ LeMahieu much anymore. Because what scares me about DJ is I saw him take two of the best swings he's taken in 3 weeks last night. Two of the best swings. One was on a fastball up, and one was on a breaking ball up. And he put everything he had into those swings, and they didn't make the warning track. He has zero pop in his bat. He might get his swing going a little bit and have singles here and there, but the juice is gone. Just watching him, the juice is gone, and I'd rather play Cabrera. And when Birdie comes back, I'd rather play Birdie. And certainly if I'm going to trade for a third baseman, it's getting to the point where it's one thing if he just started and the swing doesn't look right. He had two good swings on mistakes up in the zone, and he can't get it to the warning track. That was the first time I looked at it and said, that wasn't a mishit, that wasn't a mistake, that wasn't a bad swing, that wasn't being fooled, that was the best he's got. And he doesn't have the ability to drive the baseball. And it sucks, and it doesn't mean he can't be a somewhat serviceable hitter if he gets hot, but he's not going to drive the baseball. And I don't need to wait for guys. The whole point of playing LeMahieu, for me, was that at any moment, you're hoping DJ LeMahieu returns. And you get good at bats, and you get a 800 OPS guy, and he's someone where, if he gets going, is better than the best of Oswaldo Cabrera, is better than some of these other options. And if you ever get it going, he can change the lineup. But last night was the first time I thought he had good swings. I thought he was on top of it. I thought he was not fooled by a breaking pitch up in the zone and was not beat by a fastball up in the zone. And they still were lazy fly balls that don't even reach the warning track. That scares me. It's one thing to be fooled and look terrible. It's another to feel like I got my best swing off and it did absolutely nothing. That's my problem. So that's the issue with the Yankee lineup. And for me, without question, I'm moving Soto to the top. I'm putting Judge third, and I'm putting someone I want to get fastballs in that second two, in that two hole to try and turn them around. Because that feels like as good a position and as good a spot as you could possibly have. In front of Soto, behind, in front of Judge, behind Soto, you're going to get fastballs. You're going to have a runner on all the time. You're going to have Judge behind you, who is the best hitter in the world, bar none. It just feels like a good spot to get someone going. And right now, they need Verdugo to get going. They need Volpe to get going. They're killing. Those are the two guys killing them. Because I'm done with waiting for LeMahieu. Torres has sort of come around, and I don't expect much from Wells and Trevino necessarily. Or Grisham, necessarily. The guys you expect it from are the young, hot prospect who's having the great start to his season, and then your future Gold Glove-winning shortstop of the next 15 years, and then, of course, Verdugo, who's been a solid player, who you brought here via trade, expected to be part of this thing. Going, and since he had his moment where he hit the home run, his first pitch in Fenway, since that moment, he's been trash. Everybody gets on Glaber. Watch Verdugo run the ball to first base. Watch Verdugo run out ground balls. We pick and choose who we get mad at. Look at Verdugo run. I know he ran for balls out in center field, but right now it's a major problem. 888-808-1019. We'll continue to take your phone calls, but we got to get to the Giants and Hard Knocks, and we'll do that next. Nick Monagle here with you on The Fan.
Add WFAN to your contacts to talk New York sports with us at 888-808-1019. Powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS live on Paramount Plus.
Football music here at 3:40 in the morning. So, you know, obviously last night was the premiere of Hard Knocks off-season edition with the New York Giants. And let me just say this, because I've kind of poo-pooed it. I've been a poo-pooer of it. It was way better than I thought it was going to be. And let me just start with the premise of an off-season version of it. I actually think, now I don't know because obviously it's the first one and it happens to be my team, as I am a Giant fan. So I don't know if this would necessarily be true for someone who wasn't a Giant fan. I'd have to talk to someone who wasn't a Giant fan. But I would think for your team, this is actually far more compelling than the original ones with camp. Yeah, no players, right? Well, we'll see. Eventually, I guess there'll be players. But right now, like, yeah, you get some actual football. Yeah, you get to see the players. Yes, there's some interesting storylines. A lot, they'll always pick some kid or some guy trying to make the team, and he's got, like, a background story. He's got, you know, a young daughter or, you know, they try and tie these, like, interesting stories to it, and it's always great. But ultimately, the team, it's just about them practicing, getting it together, and, you know, it's fun. It's been a great show, and they've done a really nice job with it. But this is unique. This is different. This is team building. And this gives you insight into how the most important, let's be honest, yeah, I guess, you know, the coach and the actual, you know, implementation and execution of the players are by far the most important. But in camp, do you really get a good feel for what they're going to be? Like, the games are meaningless, let's be honest. So, like, yeah, you learn a lot, but this is team building, and this is philosophy. This is learning how your team, your front office, views things and how things come about and how the inner circles of football work. And to see that meeting in January, while the season's still going on, to see, you know, Joe Shane at the head of a, you know, the Knights round table, and there's 35 guys, I found it extremely interesting. I actually think, now I don't know how I would feel if it were the Carolina Panthers, and I only use them because they were, you know, featured here, because it's Joe Shane's background, but whether it were the Cleveland Browns or whomever, if it was them in their front office, would I care as much, knowing that I already know who they drafted, I already know the moves they've made, I already know these things because I'm a football fan, would I find it as appealing if it weren't the New York Giants? I don't know. But I got to tell you, as a Giant fan, seeing how Joe Shane operates and how the team operates in the offseason and how they do things and how many people are involved and how many people speak up and the dealings of building the team, I actually think I'm going to find, and I know it's only one episode, so we'll see, but I'm going to find it more intriguing and more compelling than a typical Hard Knocks. Now, we'll see how much is left on the cutting room floor. This was only the first episode. A lot of stuff hasn't even been about decisions being made. So the final editorial for, you know, competitive balance or whatever the reason that the Giants were given complete editorial of it might not have come into fruition yet, but I got to tell you, watching the first episode, it felt like they kind of left in all the different things. And I think Joe Shane comes off great in this. I think what's going to end up coming, now listen, if everything he does is a disaster, then maybe these things will be mocked. But watching the first episode, whether it's just his presence, his attitude, eating peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, whatever the case, like just his nature, having fun and joking on the sidelines of the Senior Bowl and the different moments where you've had that kind of thing, and then whether it's what he's saying, which we're going to get to in a second here, like I just think, and let me just also too, like a young, good-looking guy, like just all of it, I think he just came off really great. I think Giant fans probably today who watch that, for the most part, feel like, wow, this guy's got it together. He's absolutely come through the ranks. They go through his career. And I mean, he's the star of the show. He's episode one. It feels like, you know, he's Michael of The Office. Like, it's his show and everything else will work around him. And I think he came off great. And I mean, really, the only thing in anything you could nitpick, really, is that he kind of misreads how much money Barkley will make. Like he doesn't expect anyone to give Barkley the big money coming off the injuries and knowing what the running back market is. So he kind of misread that, but ultimately it felt like watching it, a couple things that are the takeaways. One, because the Saquon Barkley stuff is so prevalent and people are so fascinated and Giant fans have fallen in love, I guess, with Saquon Barkley, and then he went to the Eagles to make it worse. It kind of felt like he never intended to re-sign Saquon Barkley. It looks like he has a very obvious idea about the running back position. And if you want to, he might become the poster boy of this new prevailing thought of the undervalue or the devaluing of the running back position, because that is clearly how Joe Shane feels. I mean, it's just watching it. He never felt in multiple times, he talks about the amount of money allocated to that running back position. And he talks about getting weapons for Daniel Jones, who we're going to get to in a second as well, or protecting Daniel Jones, or all the different holes they have. And time after time, it was pretty obvious that this entire, if he was going to get anywhere near the offer he ended up getting from Philadelphia, Joe Shane had no interest in paying a running back $12+ million. It was obvious. And the loser of this, and I don't want to call him a loser because I respect him a lot, but the guy who comes off sort of out of that element where that's clearly how football is going, that's clearly how every team is treating for the most part, unless you feel like you're a Philadelphia Eagles team that is a Saquon Barkley away from being a champion, the devaluation of the running back position is a widespread, league-spread thing. The only guy who comes off in this slightly outdated is the owner, John Mara, who comes into the office and speaks to Shane about Saquon Barkley. In fact, we have the cut. So this is the owner, John Mara, stepping into Joe Shane's office asking about the Saquon Barkley situation.
I mean, in a perfect world, I'd still like to have him back. I just, until we can prove that we can do, have a decent offense without him.
Daniel's making a lot of money, and it's the fork. Like, we got to figure out is he the guy? So we got to protect him. We need to put resources there.
Right. Okay. So then, and then he also follows up with talking about maybe getting one early in the draft. If I, he's a very soft spoken man, it's almost a whisper. But if I heard him correctly, the next thing is like we could always get one early in the draft, which I could not disagree with more. And that was really the cut that made me concerned about John Mara's thought process. One, how much he wanted Saquon Barkley, which we all know he did. And his point about, and it's made later in the show about, well, what's, someone talks back to Joe Shane, which I shouldn't say talks back, but gives their opinion, which, by the way, is another element of this. You found Joe Shane has not surrounded himself by yes men. Joe Shane has guys there who are willing to speak up. The director of pro scouting, you know, went back at him, or at least, you know, had the idea, the back and forth of, hey, listen, I think someone is going to pay Saquon Barkley. What is, I mean, like, they at multiple times, he was not just yes to death. They had legitimate discussions about what could possibly happen. I thought it looked like it actually looked like a healthy environment. It looked like a good, like, healthy environment for the New York Giants, where he's not surrounded by yes men. There's a bunch of people there willing to speak their opinion, including how much they thought Saquon Barkley would make. And forgive me for not knowing the names, but someone says, well, what's the identity of the offense if we lose Saquon Barkley? Which is fair, and that's pretty much what John Mara was saying in that cut. Well, unless we could prove we have a good offense without him, which I would argue, last year the Giants scored the least amount of points they have scored since 1979. They did not have a good offense with Saquon Barkley. So I think the worrying about what the offense is going to be, while a valuable and interesting question, ultimately is moot, because they did not have a good offense with Saquon Barkley. Although he might have been the focal point of it, but you can have the worst offense in 40 years without him. So that doesn't concern me that much. But I thought Joe Shane in this whole thing said a couple things about the running back position. Like I just said, I completely agree with him. I thought he came off great. And then there's two other specific things that I think he comes off great with. One, you found out where the trade for Burns began. On the sidelines, joking with his good friend, who's the GM of the Carolina Panthers, who they worked together for years, and their families are close, so you could see where this thing all, where the genesis of this was. But on the field at the Senior Bowl, he casually just says to Joe Shane, you want to give us two ones for Burns? And Joe Shane goes, literally like, ooh, that's interesting. And then they have a little discussion about it. And so to see that kind of stuff, that's really fascinating. And then for me, it makes Joe Shane look great. Now, I know it's just like a one-off to get the conversation started, but it's pretty much what he's saying. Instead of just saying, how would you be interested in Burns? He says, hey, you want to throw me two ones for Burns? It's kind of the same thing. But ultimately, the conversation started with two ones, and ultimately the trade was a two and a five. So I'm not saying that the two ones was ever a legit starting point for Burns, who is an excellent pass rusher, but two ones I don't think is plausible. But that was where the conversation started, and he didn't even get a one, because he said two ones, and he goes, I have a one and something else. Like, so he was quick to already, like, they wanted to trade Burns. But to get a two and a five for him seems like, from where they started, a pretty damn good deal. And he's been able to make some pretty decent trades here in the beginning part of his career with the New York Giants. So I thought, another way he comes off looking good is that first asking point, and then ultimately what we know he gets for Burns, which is a two and a five, seems like, wow, that's a hell of a course correction and a good job negotiating a deal for a much-needed pass rusher. Which, by the way, that's another element in hiring Shane Bowen, their new defensive coordinator. You see clearly, one, that Joe Shane allows Brian Daboll to make the hire. That's the first thing. Brian Daboll, without question, has a lot of influence and is, you know, hiring his coaches, because he clearly hires Bowen, talking about both the run game and how the defensive front has stopped the run, and that was something they need. And then in the meeting where Bowen kind of discusses his philosophy, he talks about how much they're going to need pass rushers and excellent pass rushers from the front four. And Joe Shane makes a quip, hey, pass rushing, music to our ears, which is a absolute slight at Wink Martindale, who consistently took his best pass rushers and dropped them in pass coverage. So I think they were wanting both someone to stop the run and clearly someone to hopefully use Thibodeau, and now we, since subsequently no Burns, to try and actually get after the quarterback and win in the front four instead of playing this nonsense while blitzing with with our defensive backs and pass and putting our best pass rushers in routes. Like, it just made no sense. I hated it. So you've learned a lot. You learned, one, the owner wanted Barkley. He allowed Joe Shane to do what he felt was best. Joe Shane has allowed the coach to hire the coaches. Everything about it just felt like a healthy organization. Doesn't mean they're right. Doesn't mean everything they do will work. It certainly doesn't mean that they will be successful on the field. But it does look like a healthy organization where the owner has his opinion, but the GM is allowed to do what he wants to do. That the GM might have his opinion, but the coach runs the coaching staff. Like, at least that, on some level, there is a hierarchy here that is the basis of a stable organization. And that's what you got to see in the first episode. And then the money quote. And Daniel Jones, which, by the way, no doubt, I told you this from a mile away, they are going to talk up Daniel Jones. Not only because he is the starting quarterback, and if they do have editorial override, there's no way there's going to be any cuts of him bad-mouthing the current quarterback that they clearly are going with. And I'm curious to see when they get to the draft how much of it is going to be about trying to trade up, because we all know they did. We all know the amount of work they put into looking at quarterbacks. We all know they did. But Joe Shane also gave this guy a big-time contract with multiple years left. He would sound like a fool if he bad-mouthed Daniel Jones off of 1 year. So I knew Daniel Jones was going to be favored, talked about as still someone where the offensive line is to blame for all his woes, which comes up in this, where he even says, with what we had and the instability at the offensive line, Patrick Mahomes couldn't have been successful under these circumstances, which I disagree with, because Tyrod Taylor came in and was more successful than Daniel Jones. But clearly they're in the corner of Daniel Jones, and they're going to move forward with Daniel Jones, and we'll see what they have to say. And they're going to try and make Daniel Jones painted in the best light in this, because they need him to be. But the whole thing encapsulated, and what made this GM look good, was the money cut, where he's talking to his team about Daniel Jones, the money he makes, the importance of the quarterback position. And I think ultimately this is the line that is going to be taken away at the end of episode one, because it speaks to the value of the running back. It speaks to the value of the quarterback. He even says at the end of the show, one of the last lines is, this is the year of Daniel Jones. But this cut right here is exactly the way the way football is going, and exactly what I want my general manager to say, and exactly why I'm down on Daniel Jones, because I don't deem him to be worthy of what we hear right here.
You're paying the guy $40 million. It's not to hand the ball off to a $12 million back. My plan is to address the offensive line at some point here in free agency. We're sitting at six. There's a chance there's an offensive weapon there. This is the year for Daniel. Plan all along was give him a couple years. Is he our guy for the next 10 years, or do we need to pivot and, you know, find somebody else?
That is the crux of the New York Giants season in a nutshell. And I completely agree with the first sentiment. I'm paying him $40 million. The plan is not to pay a quarterback $40 million to hand off to a $12 million running back. That is 100% correct and exactly how GMs should look at their teams. 100%. If you are paying a quarterback the way they are in San Francisco, then you can afford the high expensive running back. But the New York Giants gave their quarterback $40 million. That's it. And everything else has got to be around him. So I agree with that. And then the sentiment is clearly another year of the Daniel Jones experiment. Another year of finding out what we can about Daniel Jones. And for me, I hate that. I think the two statements almost make me happy and sad at the same time. Because one, I think the general manager understands exactly what he's doing and he's 100% right. And then the other part is, I have a six-year quarterback making $40 million, and I'm still in the we need to find out about him mode, which bothers the hell out of me. And for me, if it's been 6 years, we aren't finding out. We know. If there are still questions after 5 or 6 years, you know. So we'll find out. But they literally played it out right there. We're going to fix the offensive line. There's probably an offensive weapon in the draft, a little Malik Nabers. And this is the year of Daniel Jones. It was not the year of Saquon Barkley. It's not the year of a running back. It's the year to find out whether or not this quarterback is legit, whether or not he's the franchise guy or they're pivoting. Now, I think there are other conversations that might not be on this show about drafting a young quarterback, but that is clearly the message they're sending to you now. And whether or not it's the only thought process they had, I don't believe it is, but doesn't matter. That's the thought process that is going forward because Daniel Jones is here. He is the quarterback. He is making that money. And this season is going to be based on how successful he is. And unfortunately, that sucks for me considering it's year six of Daniel Jones and now year three of this new regime. The idea that they've already paid him and we're still trying to figure it out isn't ideal. But that's where we are. And right now, it's all positive. They gave that nice shot of the low-angle shot of Daniel Jones, so he looked 400 feet tall, and he's big and buck, and he's got the chiseled jaw, and we're going to find out whether or not Daniel Jones is that, or he's the guy who we've seen 98% of his career, which is, unfortunately, a quarterback that doesn't lead the offense to much of anything.
How about the show open? We got like 30 seconds of Gio.
I know, that's true. Gio was in there, too. They had a little Gio giving the whole rundown of the breakdowns a year too early, the rebuilds, a year or two too late. Very true. You got Gio, and he says Joe Shane says he has no idea about sports radio. Couldn't tell you what the station number is. If you were looking, he says to the guy like in the car with him, if you're looking for sports radio, I don't even know what channel it is.
Also, now that he's made all that money, he buys Uncrustables instead of making the sandwiches himself.
Well, clearly.
It looks like, yeah.
You're getting to all the fun stuff. I'm trying to break it down for Giants here. We'll get to the fun stuff later. 3:59, McMonagle here with you. Another hour until the warm-up show, 888-808-1019. We'll come back, take your phone calls on the Giants, take your phone calls on how you felt Joe Shane came about in this thing. I thought he looked really, really good, smart, capable, and the organization looked healthy. And subsequently, we know all the moves they made, but it's going to be the year of Daniel Jones. How do we feel about it? 888-808-1019, McMonagle here with you on the Fan.